Now on 7, stand by for another episode from the streets of Glasgow, where P-Division are caught up with murder most foul. Definitely not for the squeamish, this one. It's pretty dark. This is part 2 of Two Way Cut.
We present the second episode of Two Way Cut by Peter Turnbull, dramatised from the original novel by Stephen Mulroy. The discovery of a corpse on the Maryhill Road in Glasgow is not all that unusual. However, Police Constable Hamilton could be forgiven for being disturbed by a corpse in clean clothes, lying on its back and with its head staring at him, sitting in the middle of its chest. Detective Sergeant Sussex and the team are soon in action, as is the rest of P Division. Two-way cut.
The poster looks fine. You can distribute them as soon as you like, huh? Who are you putting on the investigation?
Well, Ray Sussex started the ball rolling. He's drawn the graveyard shift along with Montgomery. Abernethy is making a contribution at the moment. King's on the back shift. He should be in the building by now. And there's work still to do.
Yeah, sounds as though you're using everybody.
Well, I think I'll have to, sir. Everything else can go on the back burner.
You'd better keep remarks like that within these walls. But that would be a help, obviously. There's nothing else pressing, is there?
No, sir. Until this morning, we seemed to be in a bit of a lull, and most of the team had grabbed the opportunity to blitz their paperwork. We've had a series of off-license raids, the usual burglaries, and a willful fire-raising. The trail's gone a bit cold on that one. We've lost momentum. And I don't want that to happen in this case.
Absolutely not.
In a sense, this murder might do us some good. It'll galvanise us into action. The team's been getting its edges dulled.
Well, that's scant compensation for the victim. But I know what you mean. We've no idea who he was.
No, sir. And that's our first step. Abernethy spent the morning doing some good work, eliminating criminal records of missing persons. He seems to think he's a foreigner, for no tangible reason. And I've also put him on to checking dentists to see who might have had a dental hygienist towards the end of last week.
Yes, this cleanliness aspect's a puzzle. It's very odd.
You know, sir, I don't think it was done to hinder us. It wasn't an attempt to wash away evidence.
Huh?
I mean, if they were going to that length, cleaning the body with surgical spirit, they'd hardly have left it out in the open like that.
With its head sitting on its chest, no.
Some body, or some organisation, had the facilities and time to clean the corpse, dress it in new or clean clothes, and if they had the time to do that, then they had the means to dispose of it so that it would never be found. Now, that's my view. I think it's a ritual killing, and the body was meant to be found. And it was also premeditated.
Not an assault that went over the top?
No. The only item of clothing that wasn't brand new was the suit, almost as if somebody bought the clothes prior to killing him. Well, the suit would be a problem, of course, but they got around that by using a clean one, as if they knew when he'd be collecting his suit from the dry cleaners.
Well, it's a puzzle and a half. You'll keep me informed, Donoghue.
I will, sir.
Well, this is your baby now, Richard. Donoghue's had me combing the yellow pages half the day. I feel like J.R. Hartley. But you've got a shortlist here. 9 guys answering the description that had dental treatment on Friday. Oh,
thank you very much. What am I supposed to do with these?
Check them out, I presume. If all 9 turn out to be alive and kicking, then we're back to square one. On the other hand, somebody just might be missing from his place of residence. Anyway, they're all yours. How do you plan to attack them? Alphabetically?
South side, east side, Bear's Den, I shouldn't think so. I'll do the west end addresses first.
Well, I suppose that is where he was found. It's maybe not what one would call the West End, Maryhill Road. Not unless you're an estate agent. But it might be worth checking there first.
Yeah, you know, I'd never have thought of that. Well, there's 2 of them quite near the Locus, Wilton Street and Drybury Gardens, just round the corner.
Well, best of luck, Richard, old son. Just remember who had to do all the hard work.
Only I thought I'd better call the police, you know.
Oh, sure. And it was the children that found it?
Aye. Well, Wayne's and some of their pals, Just stay there on that wee bit waste run, you see.
Oh, right.
Just there. Of course, I mind when it was Susie's there. Rotten with damp and all. It was a good thing when they pulled them down.
Aye. So, when did you see the kids playing with them?
Oh, about half an hour ago, say 4 o'clock. I shouted down to them out the window and asked them what it was. They shouted back it was clays covered in blood. So I went down to take a look. Near broke my ankle crossing that rubble. You see the Wayne's? They hop a bit on it like mountain goats. Anyway, I gathered it up and called you fellas. I thought you'd be interested.
Do you think you could show me exactly where it was when the kids found it?
Aye, no problem, son.
Aye.
You'll see the parcel's a wee bit burnt.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if somebody's maybe been trying to set it on fire, getting rid of the evidence and all that.
Seems like it.
It was just over here, next to the big rock, or in behind it. See, there's a book of matches there. I never noticed that before. They're soaking wet. They've all been letting a wanny. Looks as if somebody's been putting a couple of matches to the burner and got nowhere. So they've tried the whole lot.
It could be. Right, I'll take these.
Zambezi Club. Who's that, I wonder?
Aye. What is it?
I hope you're not going to attack me with that brush. Police, DC King. Here's my ID.
Aye.
Is Mr. Lorinsky in?
No.
Do you know where he is?
No.
Do you know what time he'll be back?
No.
When did you see him last?
Monday.
Today's Monday, madam.
That's right.
So, you saw him last Monday then?
Aye.
You don't stay here yourself then, no?
No.
You clean for him?
Aye. Just once a week on Mondays. But no, the fair or Easter Monday or Christmas or Hogmanay falls on a Monday.
I see. So you have a key then? And you've no idea when he'll be back?
Oh, I couldn't say. His car keys are still in the hook, and his office clothes are still in the wardrobe.
Is that unusual?
Oh, aye.
Did you maybe notice anything else unusual this morning?
His hat's still in the peg as well. He always wears a hat unless it's high summer, but this time of year he'll want a hat.
And did that not make you curious?
Aye. His top coat's still there too. But I've had so much today, I've hardly had the time to think, cleaning up. He's left this place in such a mess.
Oh?
Aye, a lot of blood. Blood in the living room, tramped in everywhere. It's taken me the whole day to clean it up.
I don't think I got your name.
It's Mrs. Dewey.
Right, Mrs. Dewey, I think I better come in.
And I cleaned the blood off the ceiling. Only I can't get a ladder up to it without moving the dining table. It's just in the road. And I can't move it in my own. So I was waiting for Mr. Lorinsky to come home to lend a hand. Otherwise the whole house would be like a new pin. I'm good at my job.
I really don't think it'll matter, Mrs. Dewey.
You won't keep me long, will you? Only have a bus to catch and my sister's coming for her tea. And I'm just wondering who's going to pay me for my day's work.
Well, we needed a bit of luck. Oh, of course, you won't know yet. His wallet and all his clothes, his own clothes, that is, have been found on another bit of waste ground south of the water, Hutchison Town, I think. You'll get all the details in the folder. Blood types match up with the body and the ceiling at Drybrough Gardens. Mr. Bothwell's finished there now, I believe.
That's right, sir. There's plenty of dabs in the house. The trouble is, they all belong to Mrs. Dewey, the conscientious cleaner. Bothwell did manage to find two she'd missed, though. He sent them to the collator.
I doubt if we'll get a result today. Computer service is shut down at 5. Must be nice to work office hours. So, what do you reckon, Mr. King? I've been having another read-through, and I think he knew his attackers.
Most murder victims do, sir.
Yes, but what I mean is he knew them, but didn't believe they threatened him. No sign of forced entry, no struggle. I still can't fathom the treatment of the corpse, though. Why do that? Washing it, dressing it in new clothing. Why?
Why even bother to carry it outside the house? It's not as if they were going anywhere, a couple of hundred yards down the street. It would have been less risky just to leave it. Let Mrs. Dewey find it.
Yes, she wouldn't have called us until she'd given it a good dust and a polish. I'm sure somebody saw something. You can't carry a body down Wilton Street without attracting some kind of attention, even in the dead hours. There's always something going off down there. If it's only the druggies setting up their 3 a.m. deals. Not that they're likely to come forward, but I'm intrigued by that mysterious figure Hamilton saw running along the towpath. I'd like to know a bit more about him. Or her.
You said his wallet had been found, sir. What do we know about Mr. Lorinsky?
Well, he was an accountant with a firm called Bidulph and Company. Mr. Bidulph himself will be at home to you after 6 this evening.
Me, sir?
Yes, Mr. King. I'd like you to interview Mr. Bidulph about his deceased colleague. Should make a nice change after Mrs. Dewey. It's an address in Lindsay. He sounded very shocked. And there's another address in the file. An establishment called the Zambezi Club in Hope Street. We think the person who tried to incinerate Lurinsky's clothing used one of their matchbooks. Possibly Montgomery. He's coming on night shift with Ray Sussock, I believe. He might pay the Zambezi Club a visit.
Well, that should appeal to him.
My thoughts exactly.
What about that Saulcourt's Hotel, sir? Has anybody picked that up?
Yes, Abernethy's on his way there now. Anyway, we'll see what turns up. So, if you could call on Mr. Bidulph and pass on my request to Montgomery that he acquaint himself with the Zambezi Club. God knows he may be a regular patron already. Then I'll get off home, Mr. King, more or less on time for once. If anything breaks, you can call me. Otherwise, I'm leaving P Division CID in your capable hands. Okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yes. January was a good month for us, as I recall. We're not a family hotel, Mr. Abernethy, despite the coastal location. Most of our clients are businessmen. Ah, yes, here we are. Mr. Lurinsky came here for a weekend, the last weekend in January. He took a double room. He and his lady companion arrived Friday evening, had dinner at the hotel, and departed on Sunday after breakfast.
See. Did anything unusual occur while he was here? Anything that involved him?
No, not that I noticed.
Did his companion give a name?
They booked in as Mr. and Mrs. Lurinsky. Actually, I remember them. They seemed a bit nervous. They weren't married, I'm sure of that. Suppose you could say it was an honest-to-God dirty weekend.
Well, can you describe her, his partner?
Well, younger than him. In her late 20s, I'd say. He was middle-aged.
I wonder if you could recall a Christian name. You didn't overhear him address her, no?
No. I could tell you which room they were in.
Yes, well, I dare say it's been occupied since.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I do good business here, full most of the year. I really don't remember much about their stay, so I assume this means that Mr. Lurinsky and partner behaved quietly, kept themselves to themselves, and left the room clean and tidy.
And that's all?
Well, I think she was Oriental.
What?
You didn't ask, Mr. Abernethy. Oriental. Chinese, I would say. They were an odd couple, really. He was tall, heavily built, very conservatively dressed. She was quite petite, smartly dressed, of course, but a distinctly more flamboyant look. Also, their attitude to each other.
What do you mean?
Well, quite a lot of middle-aged businessmen bring young women to the hotel. The men work hard at impressing them, the girls show off a bit, but mostly it's an endurance test, for the girls, that is. Couples like that talk plenty, but there's not much eye contact. I've been in this business a long time, and it's a sort of hobby of mine, guest watching. These two didn't say much, but they spent a lot of time gazing at each other. I'd have said they were in love, or at least on the way there.
Well, yes, we did have an argument, and I'm a bit annoyed about it, to tell you the truth. It was to do with the name change. Nelson Mandela.
Sorry?
Nelson Mandela Place. You see, ours is an old established accountants firm, and I'd rather continue to enjoy an address in Royal Exchange Square, frankly. But don't misunderstand me. I'm personally sympathetic, and all right, the city can make its point renaming the square Nelson Mandela Place because that's where the South African consulate happens to be, but why penalise us, eh? Wouldn't you agree, Mr. King?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm aware enough of the issues.
Well, that's diplomatic anyway. You sure you want to have a drink?
Oh, no, no thanks.
Well, helps me unwind. I've put in a hard day's work.
wound the company up, got all the 90-day redundancy notices out. Ah, it's been a long day. Yes, businessmen are conservative. Especially if they deal in money. Accountants, banking houses, investment brokers, we're all frightened of anything that smacks of change by force. Established customers are actually reluctant to send us business now because of our new address.
I can't see why that should be.
Well, of course, the issue's clear-cut. The Republic of South Africa's wrong and the ANC's right. But the point is that businessmen who'd be quite happy to take the family to Nelson Mandela Park if they renamed Rukan Glensey won't send their business to Nelson Mandela Place. Names are important. If you're in the golf wear business, for instance, you'll sell a Glen Eagles golf jacket a damn sight quicker than if you called it a Motherwell golf jacket, even if the price and product are identical. Now, why? Because Glen Eagles means golf, health, success, money. Motherwell means steel, pollution, and unemployment. It's the way people's minds work. It's a question of prejudice. It's not that our clients are racist. It's a prejudice in favour of established usage, that's all. Royal Exchange Square has been called that for 150 years. It's part of this city's economic history.
Well, I still think it was a brave gesture.
Oh, I dare say it was. In fact, I'm inclined to agree, but I think a more appropriate location could have been found, like a park, as I've said. I'll say this also. When Nelson Mandela comes to Glasgow to accept the freedom of the city, I'll be among the thousands in George Square cheering when he comes out of the city chambers with his gown and scroll. Just wish they hadn't changed our business address, that's all. Some of my neighbours have moved out and set up again in Blythewood Square, and our elected representative's brave gesture is costing me money. Anyway, you've touched a raw nerve. But that's what I was arguing about with Sam Lurinsky. Now he's dead.
I'm afraid so.
Can't believe it. Murdered.
This morning. At least that's when the body was discovered.
Wondered why he didn't turn up for work or phone in sick, and then you're Inspector Donoghue.
Donoghue.
Oh, yes, Donoghue. Uh-huh. Then he phoned. You're sure about that drink? I'm still in shock, really.
You were going to tell me about the argument, Mr. Bedolf.
Oh, well, argument was too strong a word, really. I sounded his opinion about whether we should cut and run.
Cut and run?
Yeah. Sell the premises for what we could get for them. Open up in a more solid-sounding address. Surprised at his reaction.
Huh?
Yes. Sam's attitude was that moving away would be to endorse racism. I was surprised at the depth of feeling he showed. This was Friday afternoon, and I said something like, "What do you think about moving out of here and seeing if business picks up?" Well, Mr. King, he just exploded. Sam isn't a partner in the firm, he's an employee. And if a junior had spoken like that, he'd have got his jotters, no question. I think I was too surprised by Sam's evident feeling to take offence at his manner. It was as if he'd a personal stake in the issue. Anyway, I can't get over this. Muttered. Sam? Can I ask how...
No, I'm afraid I can't tell you yet, sir.
Oh, fair enough. You don't mind if I have another? Just a couple before dinner. This is a golf club evening.
You'll be driving there?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'll be safe enough. Especially after a meal. Drink doesn't affect me. I've been a moderate drinker all my days. Need it to keep going. Mrs. Bidoff says I'm a better driver when I've had a drink.
Mr. Lurinsky, he'd been with you some time.
Yeah, almost 20 years. Entered the firm as a junior. Came from an insurance broker's, I think. What I would call a committed financier.
Interested in money as a commodity, not interested in making it, if you see the difference. Very moralistic man. Came with his family, I suppose.
Lorinsky. The name's East European, Polish, or Russian.
Yes, that was his grandfather. Sam's parents were actually free church people, fire and brimstone types. Not that Sam was particularly religious, but he was pretty careful. Frugal, you know. I visited his home once. It's like stepping back in time. Amazing place, not the slightest attempt at modernization. Be a lovely place to do up, rip out that old fireplace, the antiquated sink.
Mr. Lorinsky.
Sam. Sam was a staid sort of chap. Not your sparkling sense of humor. No, didn't drink. Never touched a drop. You know, there's a lot of sharks in this business, Mr. King. They wouldn't wait to stab you in the back. Oh, no, the dreaded vorpal blade can come at you from the front, and they'll smile while you spill your blood. Oh, Sam wasn't like that. He was a meticulous man. Careful, punctual. I gave him his start, and he just got on with it. He could have moved on to other firms for more money, but he stayed with us. We could have made him a partner, too, but he didn't seem to want it. Not ambitious at all. Muttered.
Yes.
But who?
Well, that's what we're trying to find out, Mr. Bedolf.
Anybody home? Hello?
Well,
don't give me a hand, whatever you do.
Hmm? Yeah? Hello?
Good God, are you still in bed? Do you know it's the back of seven?
What are you talking about?
Yes, and some of us have put in a day's work and done the shopping. I hope you like spaghetti.
Oh, God. Yeah, and some of us work shifts, you know. What time did you say it was?
It's time you were up, Montgomery. Come on.
Hey, don't push your luck.
I'm asking you, do you like spaghetti?
Jesus, is that the time? I'll get skinned alive.
What are you doing?
Oh, for God's sake, keep out my road. I should have been at work half an hour ago.
Oh, thanks a bunch.
Yes, I'm minding the shop, you could say.
Well, I don't know if I should draw it to your attention, Mr. King, sir, but Abernethy's parked in the chief super space.
Okay. He got some useful stuff at that Solcoats Hotel, incidentally. If you'd have been here earlier, you'd have had time to clock the file. Anyway, the only league we haven't followed up yet is the Zambezi Club. Ray Sussex on this shift as well, but we thought you might be the more suitable. Ray wouldn't blend in as well, and that's not a compliment, by the way.
Yeah, I'd never have guessed. So, Zambezi. I'm getting paid to go to the dancing.
Some job, eh?
This could be a two-hander.
You reckon?
Well, you never know what you might walk into.
It's not a two-hander.
No, I mean, you're going in blind. No, one bloke on his own in a disco. And it'll look off, definitely. Men hunting packs.
Oh, yeah? Well, I didn't need a pack to find my wife. Our eyes met across the late returns counter in the library, and she took a quid off me.
Hmm. Look, take it from me, Richard, old son. Men go in packs, at least in pairs.
Well, I doubt if Ray Sussex...
No. The two of us, I mean.
Us? Oh, wait a minute, hold on.
Look, it's no problem. I'll get you home in time, no sweat. I mean, she won't turn into a pumpkin. Ray can look after the shop. Come on, grab your coat. You and I are going to gyrate.
What do you have, gentlemen?
Gin and tonic twice. Just as well, this is on expenses.
I suppose this is your idea of work.
Yeah, could be worse. Could be cops, for instance. Hey, clock the girl in the blue. Over by the stairs.
I can see her.
She's practically signalling. Arms all the time. Wonder if she's got a mate.
Yeah, well, we're here on business, remember?
Gin and tonic, twice.
Aye, thanks. Can't have a light?
Sure.
Suppose you've ran out of these. Zambezi?
These? No, we don't give them out up here. You might get them downstairs.
Downstairs?
The dancing. More like the Black Hole of Calcutta. Used to be the vaults when this place was a bank, so you can get an idea of the size.
And they give out complimentary matchbooks down there, but not up here. What's the difference?
Well, actually, the boss has got an office downstairs. I think he gives out stuff to business associates. Ballpoint pens with a club motif, the palm tree, same as these. Usual sort of thing.
What's the boss's name?
Eh?
What police?
Oh. Oh, well, it's Mr. Steen. Look, listen, if anybody asks, you got the name from the business registry, okay?
If anybody
who
asks...
Who else might be given these matches? Or have access to them?
The staff, I suppose. I don't know. I'm just a piano player.
Well, you're not a regular.
No. 3 nights.
What? Student?
Aye. Law, funnily enough.
It's a good ticket. I have a law degree. The people I was at uni were pulling down 5 times what I'm earning.
Is there something going on here?
Could be. Could be we're up a blind alley. Anyway, thanks for your help.
All right.
Well, should we go below? Or we could make it official.
See what? Then we turned up a book of some busy club matches close to where a murdered man's clothing was found. And it appeared an attempt had been made to set fire to the clothing.
Well, it'll rattle a few cages if nothing else. Let's go.
We'd like to speak to Mr. Steen, please.
What?
Mr. Steen, we'd like to speak to him.
Who wants him?
Police.
All right.
Yeah?
Police, Mr. Steen. Right, just go in.
Yeah, I know, that surprises everybody. Soundproofing.
Yeah, I can see why you'd need it.
DC King, and this is DC Montgomery.
Yes, gentlemen, what can I do for you?
We're hoping you can help us in connection with a serious crime.
Oh?
I take it you recognise these.
Yeah. Yeah, they're ours, of course.
And it's our understanding that these matchbooks are only given out to personal contacts of yours. Business associates.
Well, suppose so, but...
Would you happen to know a man by the name of Samuel Larinsky?
Samuel who? No.
You see, the reason we're asking is that Mr. Larinsky's body was found on a gap site off Maryhill Road last night. And let's just say that he didn't die of a heart attack. And furthermore, we're particularly interested in the person or persons unknown that attempted to set fire to Mr. Larinsky's clothing on another gap site in Hutchison Town, using these matches.
What's this got to do with me?
I don't know. I give in. What has it got to do with you?
Yes. Tell us, Mr. Steen.
No, I'm not. I can't be. I'm not going bald. That's ridiculous. Not me. Men fancy me. Aye, they do. They'd die for me. Maybe it's a punishment. No, I'm run down, that's all. Just tired. It's not happening, it's just imagination. Oh, God, I need a sleep. I can't stand it anymore. I need help. Oh, help me, somebody, please. Oh. Who is it?
Come on, Louise, open up.
What do you want? I can't let you in.
Get inside, you bitch. You've got it coming.
In the second episode of Two-Way Cut, the part of Detective Chief Inspector Findlater was played by Alec Monteith. Detective Inspector Donoghue by Crawford Logan. Detective Constable Abernethy by Andrew Conlon. Detective Constable King by Robert Carlyle. The Man on the Waste Ground, Gilbert Martin. Police Constable Wanless, Paul Morrow. Mrs. Dewey, Caroline Patterson. Kilroy, Robert Trotter. Bidoff, Michael Elder. Michelle, Daniela Nardini. Detective Constable Montgomery, Frank Gallagher. And Louise by Anne-Marie Timoney. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Technical presentation was by Tommy Anderson, Graham Taylor, and Andrea Cunningham. Two-Way Cut was written by Peter Turnbull, dramatised by Stephen Mulrine, and directed on location in Glasgow and in our Glasgow studios by Hamish Wilson.
And tomorrow we'll find out what's become of Louise. Part 3 of Two Way Cut is at the same time in the Crime and Thrillers Hour.
BBC Radio 7. On DAB Digital Radio, on digital TV and online.